Hi, I'm Nick Rigoretti's, and this is the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Podcast, the show for grapplers and martial artists that want to evolve both on and off the mat. Hey guys, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood Show. This is the last podcast of the year. Before we get through to the interview, I wanted to share some news with you guys. So if you've been listening to the show for any length of time, you'll probably be aware of the fact that the current theme or the central theme in my life has been, for the last year or so, has been to get my U.S. visa. I've been planning to move to the United States to start a new life there and be with my fiance. It's been a very stressful, long, and difficult process. As I said, it's taken over a year. I started the formalities in December 2016. I started getting the required documents and everything the U.S. government wanted of me for this particular visa. And for those of you who know me well, you'll know that even though I live this pretty rootless existence, I do like to have a plan and I like to have direction in my life. And if I'm honest, living in this limbo has been hell. It's been really difficult. Not only have I not been able to see my fiance for the last 4 months, I've also just found it very difficult to plan and build the things I want to create, with the sand always shifting beneath my feet and not knowing what's happening. And so I'm really happy to say that on Tuesday I did my final interview for the visa that I applied for. I did it at the consulate in Johannesburg, the American consulate in Johannesburg. And it was approved, which is such a relief. You know, I actually started crying when the guy said, "Your visa's been approved." It was definitely not my most masculine moment, but that's how anxious and that's how much pressure I was under regarding this, because I knew if it didn't work, a relationship with my fiance would be put under a massive amount of strain, and also my plans for the future, which involved building something in the United States, were just gonna fall away. And it really meant something to me. So I'm really excited that I'm gonna be moving to the United States. It's been a dream of mine for a long time. I'm gonna be teaching a series of seminars for the first year, 2018. That's next year, obviously. And I'm just putting this out there that I'm going to be available for seminars pretty much all over the country. I want to try and visit each of the 50 states in the first year. I know it's a big undertaking, but I think I can do it. And if you have an academy, or you think your academy, the academy that you train at, would like to host me for a seminar, please get in touch. The earlier you get in touch, the more likely it is I'll be able to fit it into the schedule. And the best way to get in touch is just to send an email to seminars@jiu-jitsu-brotherhood.com. And we'll have someone get back to you ASAP. So that's the first piece of news. The second piece of news is that for those of you who read my first book, which came out in 2013, The Black Belt Blueprint, I hope you'll be interested to know that my second book, which is called Beyond the Black Belt, is out now. If you're listening to this show, the book is available. If you go to store.jiu-jitsu-brotherhood.com, you'll find it there in electronic format. So a lot of you have been asking if it's coming in physical format. It probably will. I don't know when. It's quite a mission to make that happen. And I don't really have the bandwidth to get that done right now. Perhaps sometime in the next couple of years, it will come out in physical format. But for now, you can get it in digital format on the store. Beyond the Black Belt is quite special to me because it's not so much as a jiu-jitsu instruction manual as it is more a collection of philosophical perspectives on the art of training jiu-jitsu and training martial arts in general. It's a bunch of the best content from jiu-jitsu-brotherhood.com over the last 10 years. And it includes all new material. It also includes essays from training partners and friends that I respect and who have something I feel they need to offer the world when it comes to their writing, especially the jiu-jitsu world. And another cool thing about this project is it's got absolutely beautiful pictures in it. We've got professional photographs from two well-known jiu-jitsu photographers, and we've gone ahead and had them stylized and had these fantastic quotes put onto them, and it just looks fantastic. It surpasses all my expectations. Remember, if you buy the book or anything else in our store, you'll get 10% off if you use the coupon code podcast. So please go get a copy of Beyond the Black Belt. I'm almost certain that you'll enjoy it. Okay, guys, so the guest for today is Abraham March, who is the World Masters champion from a couple of years back, and he lives in Dominican Republic. Now, I didn't actually know Abraham going into this show. I had been told by a couple of people that he was a really switched on guy and that he had some interesting perspective. And yes, that proved true during the interview. He's quite an opinionated cat for sure, but I think he speaks from a good place, and I enjoyed talking to him. So hopefully you guys will enjoy this show. And without further ado, here is Abraham March. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood show. I have with me a legend, Abraham March. Is that the correct way to pronounce your name, bud?
Man, come on. I'm not a legend, man. I know it's the sport of legends, but I don't consider myself a legend, I
Yeah.
don't think.
But dude, I
Marte.
mean, you've won the world's masters. That's no joke, dude.
Yeah, well, yeah. True.
Don't sound too
True.
excited.
It's not a joke, that's for sure.
So,
Oh, man.
but
Oh, yeah. It was a great experience, but I like my friends bust my balls when I compete in Masters division, even though I'm 37. But they all my peers that are like 10 years younger, they're used to me competing at the same level as them, So when I've competed in Masters, which I've only done that twice in my life, they always, they bust my balls a little bit, saying I'm trying to, trying to beat up people, this and that.
Just tell them to wait a few years and they'll understand.
Oh, wait, for sure, bro. And kids, wait for them to have kids.
So, but I don't know that much about you except you came with I know you won the world champs, and I know you've spoken very highly of, and you came with a huge recommendation from my friend Paul Moran in Las Vegas. He said you're a very switched on guy and you're quite interested in consciousness and
Oh
in awareness and
yeah.
stuff like that. So I wanted to talk to you. You're speaking to me from the Dominican Republic, is that right?
Yes, sir. I live in the Dominican Republic. That's where I actually live and train and have trained my whole life.
Okay,
So,
cool. So tell me your story. Like, how did you come to be training jiu-jitsu?
oh man, so same as everybody, I just saw Royce Gracie in the UFCs, right? And I was interested, and then basically, I saw Royce Gracie. I was interested immediately, but I didn't think anybody here in my country would be able to teach me that. And I was wrong. Actually, my sensei was already deep in the jiu-jitsu. So when I started training was around 2002. He'd already been doing it for a while, traveling to the States to train with the Valentes or Jacare, also in Atlanta. And that's it, man. So Royce Gracie turned me on to the UFC, as many people from my generation, anyone who's like over 35 years old, that was it.
Yeah,
Like,
definitely. I remember having a picture on my wall of him doing this armbar. I think it was in UFC 1, maybe UFC 3, but he was getting kind of like stacked, and he was on the side of his face, and he still had this armbar, and you could see like it was not a fun position at all for him, but he still was hanging on to that sub, and I remember he was one of my heroes. It's a pity he seems to have I don't know, it seems like Royce has let it go to his head a little bit. Like, I get the impression that he hasn't been the coolest dude as of late, but again, I don't know the man.
I have mixed emotions about that stuff, but we'll get to that eventually or in person. But I mean, dude, a lot of stuff, honor is mentioned a lot and all that, but as we've been like doing this for so long and get deeper in it, we see that it's not always the norm. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. It's the exception usually.
Yeah, for sure. So people talk about honor, loyalty, you know, tradition. And dude, I mean, we haven't talked before, but our story is exactly the same. Minus the fact that you have probably like Brazilians closer to you.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Nick, you're on my Instagram live here, so say hi to the people.
Hey everyone, how you guys doing?
<That's> Guys, cool. check out the Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood, Nicholas Gregoriades, right?
Oh, that's better than I say it myself. That was amazing.
Yes, Gregoriades.
Yeah,
that's some Greek shit right
there.
Yeah,
100%.
But yeah, man. So I've had like a little bit of, you know, heartache and all that stuff, just because I thought of that, like how I thought like honor, respect, was that like at the core of this as a whole? But that's not always the case. But I think when you go deeper, yes, it always is there. Mm-hmm. It always exists, you know. That's the beautiful thing about the art. But it's not so, like you see like the traditions that they try to impose or whatever, they're like made up as we go.
Mm-hmm.
So like what, like you, the red belt, you get red belt when? And when do you get the stripes? And when do you do this? And then people make up a belt in between and all that shit.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm. That's crazy. Do you think you were disappointed maybe because you had unrealistic expectations to start with?
I don't think they were unrealistic, because the thing is, I think my expectations were closer to what judo is like, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which is... I don't think traditional martial arts entertain or promote like self-indulgence. And somewhere along the way, I think we've lost that in jiu-jitsu or gained that negative aspect of it.
That's interesting.
So the other day I posted like how compatible is look at me, look at me, look at me with martial arts.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand the UFC has a big part to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
And also the fact that, how old are you, Nick?
I'm 38, my man.
I'm 37, about to be 38.
Mm-hmm.
Also the fact that most of the people that are doing this and competing at the highest level are kids. So think of us having the power that we have right now, meaning the jiu-jitsu power, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
When you're like 20 years old. So
yeah, it's crazy.
I understand where it's coming from. You get? I understand why a person like Herbert Santos is a major douchebag. Like, I get it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think somebody should be there to regulate that and teach them like a better path.
Yeah, I mean, this, what you're saying is so interesting. In fact, it comes at a very... very good time. You know, I'm going to be straight up. I'm super aware of my ego and how it gets the best of me sometimes. And I know that we all have these labels and these stories we tell ourselves of who we're supposed to be. And one of my labels and stories that I tell myself is that, like, I'm trying to be this kind of Musashi type character, you know, this masterless samurai who is walking this path to discover more about himself and and gain control of his emotions. And man, today something happened to me on the beach. It was about 3 hours ago. I do this other sport called kiteboarding, which is big there in Dominican Republic, actually.
It's huge. Yeah. We have world champions here.
Yeah. So I was doing kiteboarding and I got into like, almost had a collision with another kiteboarder on the water. And then I got out the water. We both got out and, man, I almost picked a fight with this guy. I literally went up to him and I was like, what the fuck are you doing? And I was a dick, dude. I was a total dick. And I remember he was just
looking. Just because you know you can. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. I realized, look, if it comes down to a confrontation, I'm probably going to be able to beat this guy. But
yeah,
he was the better martial artist, because he just said to me, look, bro, you know, I'm sorry. There's no reason to pick a fight with me. I'm sorry. I didn't do it on purpose. And like, he was so zen, dude. And I literally left the beach thinking to myself, God damn, I'm a failure. I'm a total failure. All these stories I'm telling myself, like everything I'm striving to be, and
No, yeah.
it just all went out the window. And
No.
I guess why I'm saying that, Abram, is maybe we should tie that into, we're all human, right? And when some of us see a guy like Royce Gracie and he might do some douchebag type things, part of me is thinking to myself, look, he's just a man and he had so much stuff put on his shoulders when he won that UFC one. And who's to say you or I wouldn't have acted in the exact same way if we were in his shoes, you know?
Yeah, well, dude, that's the thing. That's, oh, fuck, man. So as far as like the Gracie stuff goes, you know, it's just like anything in history. Like, what we know is what we're told. So what is the real history of it? You get what I'm saying?
I think so. I think so. Can you tell me a little bit more?
A lot of this was brought to my attention because 3 years ago I switched to GF team, which is another, it's like a non-Gracie lineage team. They come from FADA
Okay.
lineage. So as you get deeper and deeper in the culture, and I know a lot of Brazilians, like I have really dear Brazilian friends, so I get like truer quote unquote information, like the real story about how stuff happened. And you know, you as a grown man, you make, you know, you make assessments of things, not meaning that you're infallible, but like taking it back to that experience you just had, like you were an asshole in more ways than one in that situation, because probably the only reason you reacted that way is because you knew you were on the winning end of that fight, let's say, you know.
Yeah,
I
definitely.
highly doubt if you were here in the Dominican Republic and that happens, and it's like some ghetto ass dudes like it up in your shit, I doubt you would like fuck with them.
100%. In fact, you know what? The guy's buddy came over as well. And as soon as there were two of them, like, I realized, okay, cool. This is not what I thought it was. Like, and I kind of toned down. Do you know what I mean? Because I wasn't, then again, I wasn't, so, then it became that I wasn't that sure of myself. I was like, fuck, there's two guys now. I might know jiu-jitsu and they might not, but, you know, I'm not like
Or they could
invincible.
stab you.
It's exactly.
You get what I'm saying? So you were just being basically AJ Agazarm, basically. You get it?
Yeah, I do get it. I do get it.
So
And
you acted like a fucking kid, not like a 38-year-old man.
100%. Yeah, it wasn't my proudest moment, that's for sure. So basically your guys, this GF team, the consensus or their beliefs are that like the Gracie's exaggerated some of their claims or
No, not really. That's never even been a conversation. But just comparing it to the first stuff we got, you know, which was like, oh, it's Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, which was I that's what I originally learned. What I originally learned was Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. You just learn, man, and you hear stories, and you know, and then you make your assessments and opinions about people and facts, you know?
Yeah, I guess the thing we have to remember is the Gracie's family is what, maybe like hundreds of people big now. It's just massive. And I realized that in any group of hundreds of people, there are going to be some dickheads and some amazing people. Like I always tell people that Roger, who's the guy who gave me my black belt, he's a really cool guy. You know, if he was a dickhead, I'd say straight up. I'm big enough of a man to admit, like, if he was a dick, I'd be like, you know what, I got this belt from him, but I actually don't like the guy. But I really
Brother.
do like him. However,
Name.
I've met a couple of other dudes in jiu-jitsu who have huge names, and man, these are not people I'd want to spend time with. No way. So I get where you're coming from.
Mick, no one gets to that level if they're a dick.
Yeah, basically.
Eventually, people will understand that. You can make all the noise you want, but, like, for example, I don't know Conor McGregor, right? I don't know the guy. I see the persona he portrays. But I could fucking guarantee you, I don't know about right now, but I can fucking guarantee you, a year ago, that guy was probably not a dick. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're full of yourself, if you're not really humble, you'll never reach that level, man. Dude, it's so, I mean, there has to be exceptions to this rule, but Roger level, Buchecha, Leandro, you're not going to get there if you're a fucking dick. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't know if I agree entirely with you. I think a better way to put it is you might get there, but you're not going to stay there.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then you're not on that level, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Because those guys got there and stayed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's a good point. That's a good point.
And
it's
something that even myself, like I don't consider myself a dick. I don't think a lot of people do consider myself a dick just because I'm very blunt. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do understand that. I need to be more like that, actually. I've realized it's something I'm actually, it's a deficiency of mine, is I think I can be too nice to people sometimes. And
too diplomatic?
Yeah, too diplomatic. And
yeah.
I think this is, it's helpful up to a point, but when it's not genuine, then it's actually counterproductive, and it's something I want to work on.
But something I have learned about myself recently is I do have to change the way I transmit ideas. So before, let's say, John Doe, Brazilian dude, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who's a legend, let's say. Mm-hmm. But I know the guy's a piece of shit for a fact. Then originally, or me, a year and a half ago would be like, oh, that guy's just a piece of shit. Don't associate with him. But that always comes off the wrong way. You get what I'm saying? And I'm not conveying the message that I originally intended to. Mm-hmm. So if what I want to give you is advice on how to have a better diet, you know, maybe me telling you, Nick, the vegan diet is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to do it. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
That's where consciousness and kindness comes in. And I can't say I'm deep into it, but I do slowly have also the age, bro, I guess. Life teaches you, no?
Yeah.
So if you allow it, no?
Yeah, that's something I've had on my mind for a lot. You know, I consider myself, Aram, someone who I am really, really, really trying at life. I know that sounds kind of strange. It's maybe a strange statement, but I said that to my fiance about a year ago. I was going through this tough time, and I said, you know, babe, like, I can honestly say one thing about my life. You know, I fucked up. I've made loads of mistakes. But goddamn, I'm trying so, so hard. On every level, I'm trying so hard with my work, with my relationships, with my health. You know, I'm actively trying to learn and become a better human being all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. It's like I study life like I study jiu-jitsu. I want to be a black belt at life, you know.
Yeah.
And I wonder if everyone's doing that subconsciously, you know, like, or most people are doing that.
Your ego's the biggest hurdle. So before you realize that, I mean, I don't think you can really try that either. You know, on an unconscious level, we all want to be good and we all want to be acknowledged, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think on a deeper level, you have to understand, just like you're becoming aware of your own ego, just like I'm becoming aware of mine, and then it changes the tone of the conversation, or changes the field of play.
Could you explain a little bit more about what you mean?
Maybe we should start this over, dude. This might be confusing.
No, go for it. The listeners can take it. They're a smart bunch of dudes. Go for it.
So, anyways, bro. Yeah, man. Maybe life sent me to you to become your new best friend. Possible, no?
I guess, yeah, there are two. If I look at my life, there are two distinct phases. In one, there was before I understood what the ego was, and after I was introduced to the concept of the ego and how it worked, and it's definitely been a more interesting game in the second phase. It's strange because we're all taught that your ego is your enemy, and like your ego is a bad thing. But
Yeah,
I
that's just
think,
the bad people, though, I think.
I think your ego is just a tool, and it can be your best friend or your worst enemy, and it's up to you to, I don't want to say control it, but just to be hyper aware of it at all times. I think that's one of the most important things I've learned, is just to always try to observe my thoughts from a third person perspective, just take a step back from them and realize that I'm not my thoughts. That's been a massive, massive tool for me in navigating life.
Yeah, I agree, man. I mean, again, like in my life, I was competing for 10 years nonstop. I'm a person who usually gets tunnel vision, so I only focus on one thing, and everything else goes to shit. But what happened to me was, like, at my best moment in jiu-jitsu, I got sick, and I had to stop competing. Better, I got injured and I still haven't been able to compete again. You get what I'm saying? So that really made me like rethink or refeel everything. And now when I go back to that, it's going to be on different terms and I'm going to be very much more appreciative of being able to compete at that level. Because I know there's people who can train their asses off and never even be close to achieving or to be able to compete at the level which I compete in. You get what I'm saying?
What injury did you have, Abraham?
Last year before Worlds, I got the chikungunya. It's like a dengue type
Damn.
disease.
Oh, that's terrible.
So, dude, I had the best camp, the first time I've ever done a camp for Worlds in 10 years.
Well.
Like a real camp, you know. I went to Brazil. I stayed there for 2 months, and I was training with Alexander Trance. I was training with Patrick Gaudio. I was training with everyone at GF Team headquarters. And I honestly, I'm not a cocky person, and I'm not like I don't lose sight of like where I am realistically. Skill wise or conditioning wise. And dude, for real, I felt at the top of my game.
That's
And
cool.
right there, the last week of the camp, I got sick.
Oh, that sucks.
It was crazy. And it was something that the year before that, I put together a camp for ADCC at Cyborgs. I don't know if you ever saw videos of that.
No, I haven't. But I'll check them
It's a
out.
big camp. It was Cyborg, João Gabriel, who's like one of my best friends, Rodolfo, and myself. We all training together for ADCC. And I invested all that energy and brought people who like Gutenberg Pereira, who's like now like a pretty hot black belt, Dante also, like putting all those people together to kind of like putting all my eggs in one basket just to like kind of like blow up at the end of that investment. You get what I'm saying?
What do you think the lesson life was trying to teach you
Oh,
was?
it definitely that, just that you don't control shit. You get what I'm saying? You
Yeah,
only
totally.
control how you react to stuff and what you make of events. So it all started like summer of 2015. All the way to summer of 2016 to for me to like finally, okay, man, I'm gonna be ready to like win fucking worlds now and do my best. And man, it didn't ha like I couldn't go. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't fucking go. And I've gone to depression a couple of times in my life. I didn't go through one per se this time, but it just gave me that perspective and enjoy being able to do something that we love, like kite surfing, right? You love jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Dude, you're so blessed to be able to do those things.
I know, dude, and I count my blessings every single day. Every single day.
Tomorrow, we could lose our fucking limbs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's people who are like chilling at home and a bomb drops in their fucking head.
Yeah. I guess you see this on a much more real level in a place like the Dominican Republic, because you're surrounded by a lot of poverty and a lot of hardship, and you realize that you're one of the lucky ones, right?
Yeah, but honestly, I it's easy to be like, to have like a jaded, it's easy to have like a, to be indifferent to that, because that's how I grew up. I grew up basically indifferent to that. You get it?
Because I'm guessing you're from a wealthy family or something like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just like Brazil. It's like very, like a huge difference between poverty and uh-huh. you know, comfortable life, let's say. Yeah. But that's not why. It's just like when you grow up in third world countries, you're not easily impressed by poverty. You get what I'm saying? So if we go to Africa, like I had this conversation. I have cousins who are like half American, but they grew up coming to DR, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of them married an English guy.
Okay.
And they go on vacations to these places. And I think they went to Africa. And man, my cousin-in-law, right?
Yeah.
Right? He was like, fuck, like, you know, in shock. And my real cousin was like, you know, I mean, it's not that you don't have sympathy for it or empathy, but it just affects you differently. So same thing, if we go to a Brazilian favela, like, I wouldn't be impressed. You get what I'm saying?
I understand the point you're trying to make, but, you know, I grew up in South Africa and...
Uh-huh.
I never got used to the poverty, man. I still struggle with it every single day. It hurts me to see these people. It hurts me, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess, dude, I guess that's Africa's like next level, you know? That would be like Haiti. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, it's, yeah,
it's, you know what I mean? Level. Like, once you see it, it's like, fuck.
Yeah.
But what I mean by that is, what I was trying to make, the original point I was trying to make is, I was just in my bubble of life. At no point in my teenage years did I ever feel like, you know, I was closer to entitled, or I was more entitled than
I understand.
Grateful. I don't know if that was the case with you.
I think it was a combination of both, man. I was probably, you know, spoiled like most white middle-class people in South Africa, but I was uh-huh. also very aware of the fact that there were people around me suffering, man. And
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. It's a difficult line to walk, I guess. But I guess uh-huh. it's nowhere near as difficult as the line that the black people walk here is.
Imagine, man.
I guess the important thing that the point or the place that we've both arrived at is, as you said, gratitude and awareness and empathy. And
sure,
you know, I never want to be one of those people that just I see people like that here in South Africa, and I only really figured it out once I came back, once I've been away for a long time. To survive and operate as one of the haves in a place like South Africa, you have to just pretend the have-nots don't exist. It's the only way you can survive without going mad. It's the only way you can drive to work in your nice car and come home to your apartment and every day see people who are literally starving and have nothing, sitting in the sun begging. That's the only way you can get through it, is eventually you have to become numb to it. And
correct.
It's weird. Like, I'll go to the beach here and I'll look at these people who are like lying on the beach, and I'm like, how can you just be lying on the beach chilling out?
You're maybe that's what I did my whole life unconsciously, you know, just numb it out. I don't know. I don't fucking know.
It could be. But
again, at the same time, growing up, even if I was from a wealthier family, I would go outside and I have friends from all different like levels of society.
That's cool.
Of wealth. That's you get
really
what I'm
cool.
saying?
Yeah, that's really cool.
So that's why when conversations like this happen, it's weird. Like only people from similar countries could kind of understand me. Like, I don't know if you've gone to Brazil.
Yeah, I have.
To train. It happens also there. So you have a guy like Jackson, who's from a favela, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a guy like fucking, I don't know, man. Leo Leite, mm-hmm. who's like from a wealthier family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like it's normal. It's not so divided. In our countries, it's not so divided. You get it?
Yeah, I get it. So, and that's one of the cool things about jiu-jitsu specifically is that
it just accelerates. It just exponentializes that, I think, jiu-jitsu does.
Because you're not going to find that at the polo club, right? You're not going to find the kid from the favela with the son of the plastic surgeon playing polo together. It's just not going to happen.
Probably not.
Abraham, man, it's very interesting talking to you. It's not what I expected at all. But again, I suppose I only knew you from pictures on your Facebook and the recommendations I had. So it was quite refreshing to see that you're such an interesting guy. If our listeners want to find out more about you and what you do in your jiu-jitsu and your academy, where should they go online?
Okay, so I'm horrible at social media, but I do have an Instagram, which is my name, Abraham Marte, M-A-R-T-E.
Mm-hmm.
And my academy here in DR is called Basico BJJ.
Nice.
So like basic Basico BJJ. We're part of GF team, and we're in the city of Santo Domingo. There's also we have an affiliate academy in Punta Cana, which is like a beach town here, like a tourist spot.
Okay.
And you can talk to Caleb Callista, who's the guy in charge over there.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, yeah, that's it. I need to get better in the social media game. But again, man, I don't fucking know, dude.
don't
another thing is, Nick, I think a lot of this is just because we're 38. I don't think we would be having these conversations or these views at 23.
Yeah, and so, you probably will have some different views at 48 as well.
Probably.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
For sure, actually.
Abraham, it's really, really good to talk to you, my brother. And I'm sure we're going to do another conversation at some point in 2018 if you're up for it.
Oh, for sure, man. For sure.
My man, thank you so much for your time, and 1,000 blessings upon you, my brother.
Oh, man, that was quick.
Well, I definitely didn't expect that. It's strange how you always kind of make an impression, or you get an impression of someone from a picture, and that's all I had to go on for Abraham March, is a picture and a couple of recommendations from friends of mine. And I'd built up in my mind the kind of person I thought he was and the kind of conversation I presumed you were going to have. And it was totally different, totally, totally different. It kind of took me off guard, if I'm honest. And that's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. I like the fact that he's not afraid to speak his mind, and he seems overall like a good guy. I think I'll have another chat with him at some point in the future, and I'll be better prepared. So guys, it's been a long year. It's finished well, but it has definitely had its challenges. Thank you guys so much for all the support with the podcast. There've been some times when I questioned what I was doing with my path and my mission, and especially with Jiu-Jitsu Brotherhood, and you know, all the feedback and the support that I've been getting from listeners of the podcast. It really helps me know that I'm on the right track. So thank you so much for that. And I want to wish you guys a blessed holiday period, and let's make 2018 the best year ever.